Chapter 41. Brest-Litovsk. Lenin's telegram to the Germans for a cessation of hostilities illustrates his Machiavellian turn of mind. He proposed a three-month truce only to delay a formal peace treaty. This would leave Germany without the benefits of a clear-cut agreement. The arrangement would give Lenin time to consolidate communist rule and to prepare Russia as a base to export revolution without freeing the Germans to concentrate on winning the war in the West. Lenin believed the German workers would follow the Bolshevik example and rise up against the Kaiser. While German-Soviet negotiations were going on, he launched a peace campaign addressed to all belligerents, a peace without territorial gains or indemnities. While he appealed to the various governments, his chief appeal was directly to the people. Lenin was well aware that the people have no say in such matters. They leave for war, make war, and come back from war with closed eyes and sealed lips. The governments, which are a front for a handful of conspirators, the Poincarés, the Sazonovs, the Chichils, the Saninos, the Houses, the Bethmann-Hollwigs, are the only ones to launch wars. But Lenin was already cultivating his image as a man of conciliation. The manipulators of governments were at the time perplexed by Lenin's obviously outrageous suggestion. They had railroaded their own countries into war for the express purpose of acquiring loot and land, and thus dismissed Lenin's proposals as the posturing of a madman. The only head of state to respond favorably was Wilson. With patent naivete, Wilson believed he could convert Lenin to his own 14 points for peace. He sent Lenin enthusiastic congratulations, which must have made the Soviet leader laugh contemptuously. Wilson's telegram, dated March 1918, addressed to the Congress of Soviets, read: "Let me take the opportunity on the occasion of this Soviet gathering to express the sincere sympathy felt by the American people for the Russian people. The American people is heartily with the Russian people in its determination to be forever free of autocratic government and to be master of its own destiny." 4 days later, on March 15, 1918, Lenin replied: "The Russian Soviet Federated Socialist Republic takes the opportunity on the occasion of President Wilson's message to express to all the world's people its firm belief that the happy day is not far off when the working masses of all countries will free themselves from the yoke of capitalism and will establish a socialist state." Lenin's foreign minister Zinoviev did not hide his contempt for the American president, and he told the United States ambassador in Moscow, "With our words we have slapped President Wilson in the face." Ironically, Wilson's capitalist phraseology was virtually the same as Lenin's anti-capitalist pronouncements. As early as January 8, 1918, Wilson had written the gist of his famous 14 points. He had originally wanted to establish them before entering the war. The main points were: the right of self-determination for all people, the abolition of secret diplomacy, freedom of the seas, and peace without annexations or indemnities. How the British and their allies would allow people self-determination, and they already had disposed of their freedom in secret treaties, was another question. Lenin had accurately assessed all the governments bound by secret treaties: the war is waged by slave traders haggling over cattle. In fact, the allies were haggling over the Rhineland, Tyrol, Sudetenland, Prussia, Carpathia, Dalmatia, Smyrna, Armenia, Mosul, Baghdad, and Jerusalem, as well as other territories scattered all over the world. For several years, millions of people had been secretly swapped without their knowledge. Wilson wanted commitments in favor of self-determination, but it was too late. The bids and the deals were closed, as the president would realize a year later in Versailles. All peace negotiations would fail on this account. Lenin knew very well there was not the slightest chance of convincing the Allies of renouncing their booty of land and people. His cynical intelligence understood the usefulness as well as the uselessness of Wilson's peace demands. He would go along, propose an unrealistic peace, since he knew the Allies would never accept it. Lenin calculated that the upheaval caused by the Allied remapping of the world would open the way to communism. Lenin added a new dimension to traditional imperialism, and to such ethnic enmities as that between Slav and Teuton: the introduction of communist imperialism. Unlike conventional imperialists, who sought to grab a specific piece of land, communist imperialism sought to conquer the entire world. It was a basic difference that would transform the world. From Lenin on, age-old quarrels only played into the hands of the communists. Only cooperation would save nations with a common history and culture. In Petrograd, Lenin had no choice but to bring peace to the masses very quickly. His October victory was still fragile and was geographically and numerically limited. Kerensky was still in Russia, in the town of Gatchina, only a few miles from Petrograd. He still had a force of loyalist troops and appeared hostile to Lenin. In the countryside, resistance to communism was on the rise. Lenin admitted, "Everything is hanging by a thread." The thread was a German one. If he let go of it, he would be swept out of power as surely as the Tsar or Kerensky. Germany was no longer going to put up with Lenin's ambivalence, and sent him an ultimatum. Lenin realized he could no longer string the Germans along, particularly since his own survival was threatened. On November 23, 1917, Lenin and Trotsky were forced to sue for peace and to begin negotiations with Germany over the terms a month later at Brest-Litovsk. Both sides would gain and lose. Germany would win by having imposed its armistice demands, but Lenin would win by cunningly prolonging the negotiations for 4 months. The Bolshevik delegates ranged from the grotesque to the sly, convicted murderers back from Siberia, Comrade Bezenko, and a drunken laborer who picked his teeth with his fork were put forth as the people's representatives, dictating the people's will. Behind these front men operated three of the most important Bolsheviks, the real negotiators. They were Abramovich, Rosenfeld and Bronstein, who were now going respectively by the names of Joff, Kamenev, and Trotsky. They turned the negotiations into a Marx Brothers routine that left the Germans bewildered. At the sight of the drunkard, the murderous and three devious Jews, General Ludendorff asked in amazement, "How can we negotiate with such people?" Ludendorff would have liked to march on to Petrograd and Moscow and wipe out the Bolshevik nests, but that would necessitate maintaining a large German army in Russia, and Germany needed all its forces on the Western Front. At last, Germany and Austria agreed in principle, in order to end the dialectical antics, to let the people living within German-occupied parts of Russia decide of their own fate by way of a plebiscite. That was the trio's first demand. Another demand was made to the effect that Germany should evacuate the territories and let the Bolsheviks organize the plebiscite. The Germans, who had observed how on October 25, 1917 less than 10% of the population had imposed Leninist dictatorship on the rest of the country, refused to entertain this notion. Negotiations were thus interrupted for 10 days, from December 28, 1917 to January 7, 1918, and the Bolsheviks gained vital time. These delaying tactics helped Lenin's foreign policy, but did little to help him on the home front. In fact, he was losing ground despite massive repression at every level. The working masses had elected only 175 Bolshevik members out of 717 members of the Constituent Assembly. It was a stinging rebuff which Lenin was not about to tolerate. On January 18, 1918, the new assembly met to take their seats for the inaugural session at the Taurid Palace. As they arrived, they were threatened and harassed by the Bolshevik police. The whole district was under a state of siege, with machine guns positioned on every rooftop. The next day at 5:40 in the morning, the Constituent Assembly was summarily dissolved, after only a few hours' existence. Suvorin reported what happened a few hours later. The workers organized a peaceful march to demonstrate sympathy with the men they had elected. They carried the red flag. Suddenly, without any warning, they were mowed down by machine gun fire. 21 workers fell dead on the pavement. Thus did Lenin treat the proletariat in its very first popular demonstration against his regime. Such was the plebiscite, enforced by machine guns, which Trotsky wanted at Brest-Litovsk, and which the Germans were not prepared to grant. Trotsky invented new ways to delay the negotiations. On January 22, 1918, he engineered, through the Central Committee of the Bolshevik Party, a novel proposition: the Soviets would not sign a peace treaty. They would declare peace unilaterally and demobilize. Trotsky calculated this temporizing would give the German Marxists time to organize in Germany. Professional agitators had had a certain success in promoting the slogan, "Peace without annexations," among the German workers. The most aggressive agents of Bolshevism in Germany were Karl Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg, both coreligionists of Trotsky, Bronstein, Kamenev Rosenfeld, and Joff Abramovich. Luxemburg and Liebknecht had orders to exert maximum pressure on the German negotiators at Brest-Litovsk to force them to accept Trotsky's demands. Steelworkers' unions were enlisted to spearhead public demonstrations. Soon, 500,000 workers would join the protests. It took all of Ludendorff's skill to defuse a potentially disastrous situation and put the men back to work within a week. Ludendorff thus experienced the subversive actions of alien agents within the borders of Germany, which he called "so many daggers stabbing our soldiers in the back." The German high command could no longer tolerate Bolshevik intrusion in its internal affairs. At that time occurred a fortuitous event for Germany: the immense land of Ukraine, rich in the wheat so critically needed in Austria and Germany, proclaimed itself an independent republic. A Ukrainian delegation came to Brest-Litovsk to sign a separate treaty of peace and collaboration with Germany. The richest part of the land would escape the Soviet grasp. On February 9, 1918, at 2 o'clock in the morning, the German-Austrian-Ukrainian peace was signed. Ukraine would immediately deliver 1 million tons of wheat to Austria. When the Bolsheviks attacked the Ukrainian capital of Kiev, German-Ukrainian collaboration became an alliance, which would free German troops from southern Russia. The treaty had thwarted Trotsky's blackmail. In a state of rage, he stormed out of Brest-Litovsk on the first train to Petrograd. Without a peace treaty, the German troops were ordered to advance toward Petrograd. The Germans met no resistance and their offensive was swift. "It is the most comical war I have ever experienced," said General Hoffmann, who led his troops by train. "An infantry detachment is loaded, along with machine guns and a mortar, on a train riding to the next station. The Bolsheviks are taken prisoner and the station is captured. Then a new detachment is brought up by rail, and so it goes." At that rate, the Germans stood to reach Petrograd within 2 weeks. Lenin realized that his delaying tactics at Brest-Litovsk had not paid off. In fact, they had backfired. The possibility of utter defeat for his communist revolution was real. This time, he knew, he would have nowhere to run. Lenin reorganized his priorities. He was prepared to agree to almost anything as long as he could retain some part of Russia as a communist base. The French embassy, desperately trying to keep him in the war, was offering divisions and millions in gold. The Central Committee agreed to accept the help of the French imperialist bandits against the bandits of German imperialism. The Kaiser's bandits were by now halfway to Petrograd, just 100 miles away from Lenin's stronghold. Trotsky, who had wanted to put up a fight, was finally won over to Lenin's viewpoint and provided him with the crucial vote required to sign a peace treaty. On February 26, 1918, the Bolshevik delegation appeared once more at Brest-Litovsk. This time there were no delaying tactics. The Soviets hardly looked at the documents. On March 3, 1918, they signed a peace treaty with Germany. For Lenin, the choice had been peace or extinction. "Yes," declared Lenin, "this peace is our most horrendous defeat. Yes, this peace is a major humiliation for Soviet power. But we are just not in a position to force history." Germany's gamble on Lenin had paid off. Without him, Russia would still be at war. Furthermore, Lenin had been neutralized, just as his revolutionary doctrine was about to spread like a typhus epidemic. Little was left of the Russian Empire: the Baltic countries, Poland, Belorussia, Ukraine, Crimea, and Tiflis were in German hands. The Soviet Empire had shrunk to the size of an indigent province. Romania, Russia's ally, had been defeated by General von Mackensen. It capitulated 5 days after Brest-Litovsk. Besides losing the Dobruja, Romania had to lease its oil wells to Austria and Germany for a period of 90 years, as well as give Germany an option on all meat, corn, and feedstock for the following 8 years. For Germany, the satisfaction of winning on the Eastern Front was marred by the landing of hundreds of thousands of American troops on the coast of Brittany and Bordeaux. But the British blockade was of little import now that Germany had access to all the food and raw material at their doorstep. Germany was poised to win the war in March of 1918, plentiful supplies were assured, Bolshevism had been pushed back into an icy corner of Russia, and the wealth of Russia was at Germany's disposal. Only the intervention of the United States government threatened German victory. Yet, the Reich had to make up for lost time with a tremendous thrust westward. The Germans were led by the greatest military genius of World War I, General Ludendorff, the right-hand man of Marshal von Hindenburg. The German war machine was at the peak of its efficiency. In less than 3 months, 600,000 soldiers were brought back from the Eastern Front, along with all their equipment, to reinforce German positions in Champagne and Artois. Ludendorff was methodically massing the entire German army for the final round.